from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump's proposed $148 million budget cut to the National Endowment for the Arts has been sending nervous ripples through the arts community. We'll hear voices from SF MoMA, local theaters, and artists about how this is going to have impact on the Bay Area in terms of the cuts to NEA funding. Join us after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump's proposed $148 million budget cut to the National Endowment for the Arts has been sending nervous ripples through the arts community. And I want to find out in this segment what it would do to affect museums, theaters, and other arts groups here in the Bay Area if the proposed cuts actually did happen. Joining us here in studio for this segment is Neil Ben-Ezra, who directs SF MoMA. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
We also are going to say good morning to Dana Zell, who's also with us, Managing Director of the Children's Musical Theater in San Jose. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Brad Erickson, who's Executive Director of Theater Bay Area.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, and we'll be checking in with some other people through the course of this hour. But let me begin with Neil Ben-Ezra about something that is definitely not on a lot of people's radar screens, and that is a lot of the exhibits that you see, like the ones that are going on, kind of the three main exhibits now here in San Francisco, art exhibits, get their indemnification and get their insurance thanks to the NEA. Neil?
Well, the federal indemnification program is a little bit below the radar screen, but one of the most important programs that the government administers. One of the biggest challenges that museums such as mine have is the cost of insurance. The cost of insurance of valuable works of art on loan and, of course, the high cost of insurance just in general. And so what the indemnification program does is to provide a kind of offset to the cost of insurance. The remarkable thing about it is the program was established in 1975. It's been in place for 42 years, and there have been two claims totaling $4,700 over that 42-year period. So it's an extraordinarily effective program with a great return on investment, if I could put it that way. And the three major shows on view in the city right now, our own Matisse-Diebenkorn show, the Stuart Davis show, and the early Monet show out at the Fine Arts Museums, are all indemnified exhibitions.
So what would it, as the crow flies, cost for you, for example, to indemnify or to get the necessary insurance from, I don't know, Lloyd's of London or whatever? Because a lot of these things come across the Atlantic and, you know, you've got paintings and sculpture and so forth moving throughout the United States, like the program, like essentially what you have now, the Diebenkorn Matisse, which we covered on Forum. How much would that cost to indemnify?
Well, the largest line item in our exhibition budgets these days is always insurance. And so we're probably looking at $1 million, $1.5 million of additional expense that would put these programs at risk. So, for example, in the summer, we have an exhibition of Edvard Munch, who's the great Norwegian symbolist modernist painter. That we're participating, we've organized this with the Metropolitan Museum.
This is the Scream painter, yes?
Right, the painter, the famous painting of the Scream, but known for a lot of other work as well. It's an exhibition that we've organized with the Metropolitan Museum in New York and the Munch Museum in Oslo. That exhibition is seminal to San Francisco. There's not been a Munch painting shown in the city since 1951, and we're making this exhibition, and if it had not been indemnified through the NEA, we very likely could not present it in San Francisco.
And the reality is that a lot of revenue is brought in by tourists who come to see these shows, right?
There's no question that that's a big part of our revenue. But from our point of view, it's our local community that we really are eager to serve.
And the NEA supports also, some permanent programs. I mean projects that are upcoming, like at the De Young and SF MoMA. And what kind of support does that amount to?
Well, you know, there are lots of different programs. And we this same Matisse-Diebenkorn show received a modest grant from the NEA. The NEA gives a great many grants to arts organizations. And really what's important about them is these grants is that they're seed money and they leverage support from other organizations.
Neil Ben-Ezra, again, is managing director, is director of the SF MoMA, and Dana Zell is managing director of Children's Musical Theater in San Jose. How would this affect you, these cuts, Dana Zell?
Well,
we'll find out about the musical theater because we want people to know about it, too. But just
absolutely.
Go right to the point here, if you could.
Sure. I mean, at the core of everything that we do at Children's Musical Theater San Jose is arts education. So the cuts to the NEA really are twofold for us. One is a financial award that we wouldn't be receiving for specific projects that allow us to be innovative and try new things at our theater company. And the other is the national message that it gives to our constituents and to our funders, and devaluing the arts in general, which leads to less support for the arts across the board.
That is of major concern to you and many in the arts, and particularly when you talk about children's musical theater. We've seen such big cutbacks in schools from arts education.
Absolutely.
And we have the data that shows that arts education helps children in their regular formal education. And so there's a lot that's at risk here. I'm just wondering about your own background. You actually are an alumna?
I am, yeah. Yes.
And then went to the Big Apple and came home, as
exactly,
it were.
Exactly, yes.
And so tell us a little bit about the musical theater. What does it do?
Well, Children's Musical Theater, next year is our 50th anniversary, so we're very proud. Thank
you.
We're very excited for next season. And we produce 10 productions each year. They all feature youth. We cast every single child who auditions, regardless of financial or physical limitations. That's been throughout our entire history, that's been the tradition.
And even if they can't act or sing?
Doesn't matter, because every child, the real thought process there, the vision there, is that every child has something, can reach their highest potential and create something that's remarkable for them individually. And so the kids who perform with us run the gamut of beginners to veterans on the stage. We have some sixth and seventh graders who have 30 shows under their belt, and they're performing alongside an 8 or 9 year old who this is their first experience. And they go through it from the audition process all the way through opening night and through the run of the show. And to see the growth of these individual kids is just astounding.
And when you actually get money from the NEA, it sort of sends a message, doesn't it, that you get a, I don't know, national seal, or you have national value. Getting in that sense of the national imprimatur really brings in more revenue and brings in more support.
For sure. That's really been the most valuable piece of the NEA for us. We started receiving support from the NEA about 15 years ago, and we've received 10 awards throughout that time for individual projects, for mostly for our main stage productions, which feature high school and college age students. And it really is like a seal of approval or a piece of prestige. And it changes the story that we're able to tell to our donors and to foundations and corporate support, that we are nationally recognized. And that really does have an effect on the way that we tell our story and the way that people see us and opportunities that we're given.
Also, the kids who come into your program, I imagine a significant number of them develop a passion for the arts.
Absolutely. I mean, you can feel it when you walk through the rehearsal hall between starting at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. CMT is just filled with kids who have found their passion and have a love for theater and a love for performing, and they're learning life skills. They are building their own confidence and responsibility and learning how to project manage and positive communication, conflict resolution, all those things that you need as adults to succeed in whichever path your life takes you.
Again, Dana Zell is managing director of the Children's Musical Theater in San Jose. Brad Erickson is executive director of Theater Bay Area. That's 90 groups here in the Bay Area that get funding. And NEA spent last year, what, over $3 million, Brad?
That's right. San Francisco alone last year received $2.5 million, and the greater Bay Area, well over $3 million. Here in San Francisco, one of the things that people don't know about the NEA is how many different groups it served. And as we were preparing to come in, we were discussing that amongst ourselves. I counted it up. Last year, 90 organizations in San Francisco alone received funding from the NEA. And as Dana was just saying, it's so important, this seal of approval from the National Endowment for the Arts, which is perhaps the most respected funder in the entire country, helps multiply dollars, which is so important, especially for small groups and mid-sized groups that have a harder time sort of getting on the radar screen.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not just talking about, I like your word, the megafauna here, you know, the symphony, the opera, and the ballet.
Exactly. And they do great work, and they get funding from the NEA too, but it's all project-based. And when a smaller group gets it, it's really a feather in their cap, and they're able to use it with individual people and local donors. The NEA says that for every dollar that they give out, another $8 is contributed from local and private donors. And if that money goes away, that $1 that then gets multiplied eight times over, then we're talking about a really huge impact on our local scene.
We were talking in the last segment about, well, we're getting ideas from listeners and talking about Hamilton and its extraordinary success, which is, by the way, now past the billion mark, but it started in a nonprofit theater.
It did, and it started through a program at the Public that was funded by the NEA to workshop and showcase new works. And at that time, no one had any idea that, you know, which, if any, of those pieces would go on to success. And without that NEA-sponsored program, it wouldn't have been able to get to where it is today. And that's true all over the Bay Area with kind of new work development programs funded by the NEA.
Well, I was going to ask you, because a lot of this is seed money and improvisational money. Talk about the Four Immigrants.
Yeah, so that is an interesting project that's done by a local playwright, Min Kong, who also works for the Bay Area Children's Theater, a colleague of Dana here. He is a playwright who has gone through a program of ours that was funded by the NEA to help artists further their careers and just kind of develop career skills so that they're able to take their talents and get them in front of people who can do something with it. He wrote a beautiful musical called The Four Immigrants, a true story about Chinese immigrants coming in about the turn of the 1900s. It was workshopped at Theater Works down on the peninsula, also with NEA, you know, supported money down there, and it will be showcased. It will be their opening their season this fall. So it's an amazing success story of a local playwright who has benefited from these NEA-supported programs and is seeing some real success in his career and telling San Francisco stories to people in the Bay Area.
And we're talking about cuts to NEA funding, and I want to invite you, our listeners, to join us. I should say that the funding is probably a lot more competitive than a lot of people realize. They're not, by the way, paying for the rent or paying for the keeping the lights on. And I think what our guests are saying really bears some serious thought. The message may be that the arts aren't worth funding when they start doing these kind of cutbacks. And for those of you who care about the arts, for those of you who work in fields that are related to the arts or are substantially at least provided for by NEA and the competition that's involved in getting NEA funding, you may want to join us and let us know what your thoughts are. We'd like to hear from you. And any questions or comments you have for any of our guests, let me tell you how you can join the program now. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. That's the easiest way to join the program now. Just call us and let us know what's on your mind and join the conversation. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Talking really about President Trump's proposed $148 million budget cut to the National Endowment for the Arts. And let's talk about what would happen again, well, to the museums with you, Neil. I mean, we've already talked about insurance and indemnification. What else?
Well, we receive exhibition funding every year, modest amounts of money, maybe $30,000, $40,000 for, let's say, the Matisse-Steven Corn Show. I think one of the key elements of this is when we speak about government funding of the arts and should the government be involved in the funding of the arts, NEA support, NEH support, is really part of a healthy ecosystem of funding for the arts. And the other two guests were saying this, Brad and Dana, that you know, that it's about leveraging additional support. It gives you a kind of a seal of approval that allows you to create a public-private partnership in funding for museums or theater companies. That's fundamentally important.
And Dana, what would be actually the result of the budget cut to you guys over in San Jose?
I feel like we're grateful for every award financially that we've received from the NEA. But like Neil was saying, they're modest awards so that they can support so many different organizations across the country. For us, our last award that we received at CMT was for our production last summer of Rent, and it allowed us to create a new program that was integrating digital technology into our production of Rent with a second screen experience. And it was a project that our artistic director, Kevin Hauge, had been excited about for a long time, but we needed specific support for that program to make it happen. And so the NEA supporting different projects like that allowed allows us to be innovative and to grow as an organization in trying new things, and that their support allows us to do that.
That's pretty much the case with the theaters, isn't it, Brad?
That's right. I mean, I think it's important for people who aren't in the arts to realize that the NEA funding is going for specific projects, right? It doesn't go to the same organizations year in and year out to cover basic expenses. Each organization has to go and apply each year with a different project idea. So I was asking some of my colleagues, you know, what are the kind of projects that the NEA has been funded? And some of them are really, really moving. Cal Shakes talked about, and Eric Ting was just on the show a few minutes ago, talked about the NEA funding that sends its shows out into schools in Alameda and Contra Costa counties. And most of these schools are Title I schools. That means that they're schools that vary from very poor families, families that can't even afford to buy their children lunches because they're on a free lunch program. They're certainly not going to be able to send their kids to the theater, and they're experiencing theater for the first time in their schools. Or the Bay Area Children's Theater was telling me about a program funded by the NEA for a show specifically designed for kids on the autism spectrum. Only 6 to 8 families would be able to see the show at a time because that's what these kids need, and they would interact directly with the actors. And one of the mothers was just in tears to see her child open up in a way that she would never be able to do otherwise. This is not something that's commercially viable, and this is something that an NEA kind of funding is able to support and make possible for the communities of the Bay Area to experience.
And again, Brad Erickson is executive director of the Bay Theater Bay Area. One day we're going to have you come in and talk about the changing nature with Kerry Perloff leaving ACT and Tony Taccone leaving Berkeley Rep. Things are very much in change. But let me bring some callers on here and hear from you, our listeners. Christopher, you're on.
So, I think art is great. I love art. My only concern is with the funding mechanism, right? And we live in a system where people get to vote. They get to choose. And they get to decide. And the way we decide is with our dollars, right? If these are artistic values that are really worthwhile, people will choose with your dollars. And when you tax people to pay for this, you're essentially telling a lot of people that their choice doesn't matter. You know, maybe instead of plays, I like worldwide wrestling or some other form of art that other people might not like. The beauty of the kind of capitalist system, and I know it's bad to call things, you know, we don't like to say things are capitalist, but the beauty of the system is everyone gets to vote for what they like. And, you know, I think if these are really worthwhile artistic programs, people will vote for their dollars with their dollars, without being forced to do it through their taxes.
All right, Christopher, this is a kind of libertarian argument that we hear, particularly people who are against funding for National Public Radio or PBS. Neil, want to address that?
Well, I think it's clear that people can support through their own dollars the things they spend their dollars on, the sorts of programs that they like. I think the point, one of the points that's being made this morning is that a lot of the work that the organizations who that are supported by the NEA do is work that's non-commercially viable. That this is cultural work that does not necessarily have the large support mechanism that the economy provides through its own means.
Brad or Dana, want to add anything to that?
Well, I think it's just, you know, as some of these examples that I pointed out, absolutely, you can spend your dollars on whatever you want to, and that's great. But some people don't have the dollars to spend. Families who can't afford to buy their children lunch can't afford to send their children to theater or to almost anywhere. And to have that brought in and have those kids have a right to be able to experience the arts in the same way that rich kids do or kids who are on the autistic spectrum, that's not something that commercial – it's just not something that's commercially viable. So the only way that that can be made possible is to have it underwritten in some way, either through private philanthropy, which is always joined with the NEA. The NEA funds always have to be matched with private funds, always.
Now, we're getting some pushback, though, here. Jan, for example, says, why not discuss the core of the matter, whether government funding and support for the arts is really what we want? Do we want the government telling us what is good art and what is not? Dana, what do you say to that?
I mean, I think so much of it is just about exposure. From my perspective, I watch nearly 8,000 kids each year come to student matinees in downtown San Jose of one of our 10 productions. And they come in groups of 500 at a time. That's the capacity of our theater. And to see so many of these kids who are experiencing live theater for the very first time in a peer-to-peer situation where they see their own peers on stage and doing a Q&A and meeting them after the show and seeing that this is something that's possible and it really speaking to individual kids that are there who wouldn't have those opportunities otherwise. And if groups like the NEA and other foundations are not supporting the arts, then these opportunities for these seedlings to grow and for us to plant these ideas of artistic passions for these kids, they just won't be there anymore.
Let me try to bring another caller in here, and that's you, Sharon. Welcome.
Hi. I have a question for the guy from the San Francisco MoMA. Let me just back up for a second. It's great to hear about all these different programs that make the arts more accessible to low-income people and children. However, I noticed with MoMA, they actually eliminated the one free day that they have every month where anybody can go. Most of the other museums still have that free day once a month. And so I'd like to know why that was done. Secondly, I'd also like to comment that they just spent millions to renovate a museum that really didn't actually need to be renovated in the first place. So instead we have this very fancy, spectacular museum, but it's only accessible to the rich.
No, Ben Ezra.
Well, 2 points. First, we did offer a free Tuesday once a month, and that's been replaced by free admission. We raise private funds, exclusively private funds, to endow free admission for anyone 18 years of age and under.
In lieu of the free day that existed for anybody before, yeah.
We're tripling the number of school visits every year from 18,000 to 56,000. And to say it's only for the rich, I think, is really not correct. Our attendance has gone up from an average of about 630,000 to about 1 million or 1.2 million this year for a full year. So there's tremendous attendance and participation at the museum.
But she wanted to know why the renovation and how you justify the renovation.
Well, the renovation was more than a renovation. We really expanded all of our facilities because our programs have expanded. We have so many more people coming, so many more members, so many more education programs that we needed a bigger building. And of course, our collection has grown.
We're talking about the arts and really talking about the future of the arts here in the Bay Area and beyond, although interesting comment from a tweet from Bob who says, since we're in the middle of an area of vast wealth, I think there's little to worry about here. Big donors abound, but this is not for large parts of the United States. Easy to say, but still, a lot of these nonprofit groups are hurting, and they're hurting sometimes because of the rents they have to pay, let alone, you know, the difficulty of really getting the word out and doing everything that needs to be done. We're going to continue, and I want to hear from more of you. I know there's a great deal of concern with the arts. It's interesting hearing from some people who feel that government should stay out of this entirely, because we are hearing from those voices as well. But you can make your voice heard, and I remind you a couple of ways you can do that. Toll-free number 866-733-6786 or email forum at kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at @kqedforum. Brad Erickson with us in studio, Executive Director of Theater Bay Area, and Dana Zell, Managing Director of Children's Musical Theater in San Jose, and Neil Ben Ezra, who's the Director of SF MoMA. We'll hear from more people about the arts. We've got a couple of call-outs, and we'll hear from you, our listeners, so stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are talking this hour about cuts to the National Endowment for the Arts that have been proposed by the Trump administration to the tune of $148 million, budget cuts to NEA, which would have, well, some pretty extraordinary effects. And we're talking about that with Neil Ben-Ezra, who's here with us in studio, who is director of SF MoMA, and Dana Zell, who is managing director of Children's Musical Theater in San Jose, and Brad Erickson, executive director of Theater Bay Area. Let me, before I bring another voice into this and go to your calls, go to some of your comments that are coming online. Listener writes, the arts are more important to me than the military. Can I choose where I want my taxes to go? Mariana writes, the arts put the civil in civilization. We need the arts for increasing our humanity and our awareness. Our taxes are well invested in supporting the arts. A tweet from Todd, art is a form of research. Like in science, we need government support for exploration and experiments. Another listener writes, people should know that funding is allocated by a panel of citizens, not the government. And a tweet from a listener, how can California and San Francisco replace this lost funding? Reform Proposition 13. Another listener says on Twitter, what other programs beyond the Bay Area does the NEA support? Veterans arts programs, rural high school theater? Well, we're going to find some of the, about some of those as well. We've got Amelia Rudolph with us, who is artistic director and founder of Bondaloop. And welcome, Amelia Rudolph.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be part of this conversation representing the field of dance here in the Bay Area. And I just want to bring up this idea of who are we as a country? I totally understand the argument. I don't want to have somebody tell me how to spend my tax dollars, but of course that happens all the time. And so as a nation, I feel like we are, you know, who are we, a nation that does not believe that the arts have value? And I just don't think that is who we are. I think that the arts is key to a healthy civilization.
Yeah, Amelia, forgive me for breaking in. You're giving an important piece of oratory here, but a lot of people don't know Bondaloop and what you do. So could you just let us know what Bondaloop is?
Happy to. So Bondaloop is a dance company here in the Bay Area, 26 years old, and we combine rock climbing technology and dance. We dance on buildings as well as in theaters. We tour the world. We are as cultural ambassadors, and we often perform, most often perform for free in public space to wide and diverse audiences. And being nurtured by the NEA over the last, I don't know how long they've been funding us, maybe 15, 16 years now at least. You know, somebody made a point earlier that the seed money, it's not, of course we are, the commercially viable aspect versus educational, all of that is true. But what NEA does is, besides the stamp of approval, they nurture so many Bay Area dance companies and theater companies and museums and so on to be able to continue to explore and experiment. And that while they're a small portion of our funding, they're a really important part of our funding.
And in these 16 years, you've had to do something different to get the funding every year.
Three shows, Boundless, which we did about 4 or 5 years ago, Harboring, which Boundless premiered in Oakland on the Great Wall of Oakland at Grand and Broadway, Harboring, which premiered at Fort Mason, and this last year, SF Public Canvas, which is a piece about and in the Tenderloin, were all nurtured in part by funding from the NEA.
Okay, and I didn't mean to interrupt your little homily there, or whatever we want to call it, so please continue your thought, if you would.
No problem. I just feel like, you know, certainly there's this presumption that the arts are for the white, the rich, and the older, you know, people, and they have the money and they can buy whatever they want. And there is a truth to that. And that, you know, President Trump will buy as many paintings as he sees fit for his apartment in New York. But it's the next generation. It's the vulnerable economically. It's the people who all these organizations who you're speaking to today and so many others are reaching into populations and into the youth who are the patrons of the future. And the audiences of the future. And it's this investment that our government, I feel, is making by nurturing companies like dance companies like Bondaloop and theater companies and so on, that is just so important to who we are as a people.
Amelia Rudolph, again, is artistic director and founder of Bondaloop. And thank you so much for joining us, Amelia Rudolph.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate your being with us. Thought comes to mind, Neil Ben-Ezra or anybody else who would like to opine on this? No, I'll just put it out there. I was wondering what kind of paintings Trump would favor, for example. That's just a thought. Here's a listener who also has a thought. It says, the question of public funding of arts is similar to public funding for other critical infrastructure like education or transportation. Funding for the arts is part of what makes America great. So make America great again. Let me go to Andrew. Andrew, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. No one has, and you all made excellent points about the value of the arts, about education, about improving quality of life for the poor through artistic expression. Sadly, no one in this administration seems to value any of those things. So you're not talking their language. As far as education, they've already demonstrated that they've cut education. They don't care about kids. They don't care about the arts. What they have made a commitment to, and you need to speak their language, is jobs. Art money, that is money from the NEA. As one of your speakers did point out very aptly, it's seed money. Probably the return on investment is close to 3-1. For something like a home run, like Hamilton, is probably 10-1. When you put on a play or a musical, you have to hire carpenters, you have to hire clothing designers, you have to buy paint, you have to do everything to produce a production that will net jobs for people, even who are not involved in the arts. So I would suggest that you tailor your language to the priorities expressed by this administration. Otherwise, you're not going to reach it.
Yeah, good point, Brad Erickson. You want to comment?
Oh, it's an excellent point. And in fact, the economic argument is one that we as advocates use all the time. I, for the last 5 years, have been heading the delegation to the annual Advocacy Day in Washington. And every year we get new information from Americans for the Arts about the economic impact of the arts on the economy. It's 4% of the entire GDP of the country, much larger than many other parts of the economy like construction, for instance. So the caller is exactly right that the arts are a real part of the economy, and the investment from the NEA, which is 47 cents per person and 0.004% of the entire federal budget. It's tiny, but that tiny investment is multiplied many times over in communities, including the Bay Area, across the country.
And how much is going to be spent to build that wall?
Yeah, right.
Let me thank the caller. Here's Michael, who writes, just as our nation is so evenly divided over politics, we are divided over supporting the arts. Many tens of millions of Americans would rather spend the tiny amount on the arts rather than pay for one more military plane. More of your calls. Let me go to Richard next. Richard, you're on.
Thanks, Michael. This is one of those places where the amount of understanding about how deeply entwined and throughout our society the arts are is lost all the time. And if the business community had to compete in the same way that the arts community does for the meager dollars that are available, I promise you they wouldn't last long. It's tougher than Wall Street. We have to follow many of the same rules as for-profit business, and at the same time do not get the advantages of a for-profit business.
Richard, I think you make an important point here, and let me go to our panelists on this because what the argument you often hear, I think, boils down to this: you can measure. Some people think you can measure education and progress in education through tests and diplomas, and they feel that you can measure profit and bottom line in terms of business. But looking for metrics in the arts in some people's minds doesn't really figure. So, what do you say to that? Where are the metrics? Are there metrics?
Well, there are studies that we've looked at in terms of how the arts impact children and how they impact.
I mentioned those, yeah, but
sure.
They're different.
It's for instance, kids that are involved in music in schools do better in math. Music and math are linked. Kids that are involved in theater do better in English. It makes sense. It's an arts form that is connected to language. But kids who are involved in the arts are also demonstrably more tolerant of difference. Now, that's the kind of thing that we need in a society like ours and like a community like the Bay Area.
Granted, but difficult to measure.
Well, they have measured them in these studies. They can show that they're doing better in math. Kids that are involved in the arts are 4 times more likely to graduate from high school. Those are real measures.
Those are the metrics. Let me get some more callers on here, and let's welcome Tavis from Fremont. Tavis, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I had a comment about the funding for the federal funding, rather than, because everybody's upset about not being able to choose where the tax cut dollars are going, rather than it being the tax going to the federal funding, or maybe it can go to the communities or go straight to the schools. directly for the arts. So each community can decide where they spend their funding for the arts and where they, what museum they send their children to on taxpayers' funding.
What do you think, Dana Zell?
I think that that might be successful in an, a community where the arts are thriving. But if you look into other rural communities across the country where the arts might not be as much of a priority or there aren't as much access to the arts, I think that there are a lot of people who are going to miss out.
You know, one of the criticisms of the NEA in past decades was that the grants were given to only select urban areas. And I think the NEA took that very seriously. And over the course of the last 10, 15 years, we found that NEA grants are given out to almost every congressional district in the United States. So the work is being done on a local level.
Much more diffuse than it was, say, even five years ago.
And it's a great improvement.
Here's a listener who writes, NEA and NEH funding helps correct barriers and imperfections in the marketplace, where the natural tendency of big institutions is to get bigger and exert more control over the marketplace. It is not empirically sound to suggest that average people can use their own dollars to vote against the natural tendency of concentration of market power. And Michael writes, just as our nation is so evenly divided, I just read that one. Let me read another one. Another listener writes, the NEA is really the imprimatur that puts the stamp of quality on an organization. Their selection process is one of the most rigorous of any grant-making institutions, and awards are made by panels of citizen peers. Nita tweets, the arts build community connections and employ across divides. Without arts, we will not understand each other as a nation. A lot of support, obviously, coming from many of you, our listeners. And another listener says, if anyone is questioning the economic impact of the arts, they should know that cultural tourism in San Francisco alone generates $1.7 billion. And we'll go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Angelique. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling from San Rafael, downtown San Rafael, California. And I've been lived out of the country for almost 10 years. I've traveled quite a bit. I came back to San Rafael after 10 years, and I noticed that there was a change. It felt like a slowly dying downtown, and the change was noticeable. Definitely the economy here has picked up, and I credit it to how accessible the arts have become in downtown San Rafael. I have a studio in a building, a nonprofit building. It's Artworks Downtown. They provide housing, low-income housing, and then low-cost studios. I've got a studio here, and I'm now in the middle of the community, and I see how it's been feeding the community. Not just has the local economy all gone up, everybody's profited because there's just more activity down here. People spend time and spend money here, but also we offer, with all the arts, music, poetry, and performance now that I see in the community, I see that there's an opportunity for communication and for community members to get together and talk about things that they don't have another venue to comfortably talk about. So, for example, since the election, the movement through our building and the conversations that have been happening, and even activities that have been inspired by that. It's a safe environment for someone who's not involved in the arts to now discuss these ideas in a creative way and in an environment that's safe. We're having an exhibition next week open to all people in the community with activism signs, and it's all voices are welcome. People have been frustrated that there's this division between ideas, people who, you know, have voted for Trump and who hasn't, and we want to be able to just talk to each other and talk to our neighbors. This is a safe environment, and I think people underestimate the impact financially on a community.
As well as bringing the community together, like you're saying, and Angelique, thank you for that call. I'm wanting to bring another voice into this from the arts community. Chris Vertigo is executive director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, and I believe we have him on the line. Chris Verdugo, excuse me. Are you there, Chris? No. Okay. We'll try to get him on the line here. In the meantime, a listener writes from the Luna Dance Institute on Twitter, the NEA allowed us to provide support for 200 dance teaching artists per year who teach 250,000 public schools, public school kids, excuse me. We have Chris on the line now. Okay. Chris Verdugo, are you there?
I certainly am.
Okay, glad to have you. And first of all, condolences over the loss of a member of the Gay Men's Chorus who died during intermission. It was a big story in the news. Ryan Nunez in production of Paradise Found at Herbst Theater. Sorry for that loss because I know he was much beloved in the Gay Men's Chorus. Where does the Gay Men's Chorus fit into NEA funding?
First of all, thank you for those condolences. It has been, as you can imagine, a difficult time here at the Chorus, and we appreciate all of the outpouring of love that we have received from our community. So I thank you for acknowledging that. So as far as the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus, we actually have a proposal before the NEA, a grant submitted to help fund one of our events next year, which is it's our 40th anniversary. So it's quite a celebration, quite a milestone for the organization. And so we have that sitting in front of the NEA, and as it stands now, who knows the future of that particular proposal? Although it looks really, really bad, right? As I was telling one of your producers yesterday, the concert that we went out for that we submitted this grant for will happen. Well, it will happen because it is our 40th anniversary, and nothing is stopping that from moving forward. However, it will make it all that much more difficult to secure funding had we not had that sizable gift from the NEA.
Well, I wish you good luck and congratulations on the 40th anniversary. And
thank you.
I thank you for joining us. It's Chris Verdugo, who is executive director of the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. I want to get to more of your calls first. Milo writes, you just asked what art Trump might favor. My guess is gigantic self-portraits painted by many, many famous and fantastic artists in the most beautiful way in color. All right, I threw it out there, so we got a response. Here's another listener who writes, if you give money to a charity, the deduction from your taxes that you get is how you control how much of your money is directed to government programs. Donate to charity and you effectively skim off the top for your favorite causes. So if you want more of your tax dollars to go to the arts, divert your dollars to the arts and away from taxes. It's not perfect control, but you have more power than you seem to think. And we'll have more callers. Let me go next to Danny. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? I wanted to put in a comment about I don't care if one dime of my money as a taxpayer doesn't bring back zillions of dollars based on what is provided for the arts. I know it does because my wife was an actress for four decades in the San Francisco Bay Area, and all the theater that we have here that has developed in those four decades was helped to spawn and develop because of the NEA. But even if that didn't happen, artists, visual artists, musicians, poets, directors, writers, don't drop from the sky. You have to, as a society, nurture them, develop them, and if you want a dynamic society that has creativity at the center of its orientation, you have to put money into that. And that generally is public money of one kind or another, whether it's hotel tax or it's NEA money. You have to do that. Now, we can make a decision that we want to be nothing. As America, we want to do nothing as a dynamic society. We want to have nothing in relationship to our creativity. And then we will be nothing. And we will not be great.
And Danny, I thank you for that statement and appreciate hearing from you. And we'll hear from some more of us, our listeners. Next is Isla, Menlo Park. Isla, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to further extend the conversation regarding the economics of the arts, and just a lot of times it feels like on these topics it goes a little bit soft and emotional. And I'm a dancer since I was 3 years old, so I definitely love the soft emotional side of it. But I think the key points in regards to tax and in regards to law are the economics and the fact beyond the point of jobs and the money that arts bring into communities and so forth. I think what we haven't spoken about is the value of including arts to young people and to children. If you looked at the long-term economics of reduced prison times or a young person, particularly in an impoverished neighborhood who's introduced to arts, they gain hope, they gain a skill, they potentially and highly
probability include increase their health, improve their health. So we're looking at like reduced tax costs from imprisonment, from crime, from health care. So, you know, the lifetime value of arts on a child is huge. The lifetime economical return from not only that child staying out of prison because they have something to do or having an improved future because they have a hope, they have a skill, they have a passion, but also, you know, the return that they're going to give in the future back to the circle of an artistic influence and how they can improve the lives of other people. So I just think the lifetime economics of the child, the impact of arts on the child is huge, and it's a big dollar.
All right, Isla, I thank you for that call. Appreciate hearing from you. And Neil Ben-Ezra, you'll appreciate this listener comment. A favorite and frequent outing for my two art-loving teenagers and their friends is to meet at SF MoMA, which would not be possible without free admission for 18 and under. Thank you. Another listener writes, entertainment is one of our country's greatest exports and is likely our greatest source of international influence. With this in mind, the NEA invests in our status as a world superpower. And John says, can the panelists suggest some ways for interested citizens to counter cuts? How can we best draw attention to the importance of all that the NEA accomplishes? Well, we're doing that today, but any of you on the panel want to add?
Well, I think one of the most important things that you can do is to tell our congressional delegation what your thoughts about this. And one of the most important things you can do and the easiest is simply call their offices. You can find their numbers. We actually have that on our Theater Bay Area website, all of the phone numbers to the direct offices in Washington of our Bay Area delegation. You just call and say, I'm in support of the NEA, and they'll say thank you, and they'll hang up the phone. You don't have to get into an argument. Our delegation is very supportive, but there's so many.
Wouldn't it be
so
more useful in some ways to call Republican congressional representatives
well,
who are not in
the
Bay Area?
Well, but they want to know if you're constituents. So if you're, you know, if you're in Ken Calvert's, you know, district or, you know, others, then that's great. But it's also important for our local Bay Area delegation to know that this is a fight we want them to fight. There's so many things that they're confronting in Washington right now, and we need them to keep their eye on this particular ball.
Listener writes, as a former music teacher, I want to draw attention to the fact that the NEA buys instruments for poor students. And let me go to more of your calls. Let me go next to Napa Valley. Jordan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am a big supporter of the Oxbow School in Napa, where 50% of our students receive scholarships, and it makes a very colorful, diverse student body. And listening this morning, it really dawned on me that one area that I would love for your panel that's gathered there with you to focus on is this as a dramatic and dangerous form of censorship. If we pull the plug on artists, this government is saying that the historians that are making art and dance and theater are no longer able to document what's happening in our lives. Could we talk about this in terms of a really scary power play coming from Washington? Yeah. I take my question off the air.
All right, and thank you for the question. What about that? Anybody want to step to the plate here, Dana?
Well, I would say for a place like CMT, it's more of a historical reference because we're recreating work that was born, you know, on Broadway or, you know, and passing that down to our community. But for us, it's looking at work like Hairspray or at some point Hamilton or work that has poignant messages about society and race and history. And
there's a lot of art that's subversive. I mean, that's, I think, the import of the question. Does it, in other words, repress that, and does it have a political impact? And I think the answer is probably yes. Anybody else want to? Well,
there was a fascinating op-ed in the New York Times this morning about authoritarian governments always attacking the arts because they know that they speak the truth and that it's true whether it's an authoritarian government on the far right or the far left. And you can look historically at that. And I'm not trying to make that kind of parallel with our current administration, but they do that for exactly the reason that the caller is saying, because artists express the truth.
Let me go to more calls, and let's begin bring in a caller from Berkeley. Richard, you're on the air.
Hello. So I wanted to ask your panel about any interest they might have in impact investing for arts and culture. The idea here is that you take the successful model of socially responsible investment and you apply it to the arts. The benefits, of course, include things like community development and creative placemaking. And the reason I think this is important, I study and research and teach cultural policy in Berkeley and San Francisco, is that the potential loss of public funding is following along with the lack of recovery in both foundations and corporate programs since the recession. So the trends are all pointing either in a flat or a downward direction. We need new models for attracting resources to culture.
Some thoughts from anybody on the panel? Neil, Ben Ezra?
One of the challenges we in the arts face today is that we need to make the case of the value of the arts to a healthy culture, healthy mm-hmm. democracy. And there are so many needs in our society, education, environmental, healthcare, that this is the fact that the NEA enables this work to be done is very, very important because there are so many other, in many people's minds, more pressing social needs. And so any kind of investment that we can make that enables this work to be done is terribly important.
And I'm wondering if we have maybe time for a quick call from Ron up in Hamilton Field near Novato. Good morning.
Thank you. My focus is on, because I go back to the 60s, and I could see the evolution of the 60s and all the creativity that was there because their school provided for the supplies, for the art classes, for the drama, for all of it. And that evolution from the 60s, where would have Stephen Jobs been? Would he have been a contributor if he didn't have the arts available to him through his education? We're in a world of change. This is the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love. That was education through a form of entertainment with music and other things in theater. San Francisco has been at the heart of that. We have really on a backward slide. If you take the arts away, you take opinion away, and when you take opinion away, you do have a lack in democracy.
Well, then we will conclude with that. Thank you, Ron, and thank all who have called and joined in this program, and thanks to Neil Ben Ezra, director of SF MoMA, and Dana Zell, managing director of the Children's Musical Theater in San Jose, and Brad Erickson, executive director of Theater Bay Area. Appreciate all of you being with us for this forum hour, and appreciate you, our listeners. Appreciate the fact, that you support KQED Radio. And Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, Jeremy Siegel, and Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer today is Jim Bennett. Engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Devin Holt and Stephanie Roberts. Our executive producer is Holly Kernan. We thank you for listening. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.